thank you all for coming to this session. It's a very special session. We've got a lot of amazing guests here today and people and speakers. First up, though, I want to introduce Hector, who's going to make a presentation about translation.
Buenas tardes. Bienvenidos a esta junta sobre migración titulada La frontera nos cruzaba nosotros, inmigración, el Estado y el Estado en el siglo XXI. Para avisarles que la traducción para esta junta va a estar de este lado. Si necesitan traducción, por favor levanten la mano y vengan aquí a esta esquina. Es todo, gracias.
I'll just let people file in and find their seats, but welcome to the border crossed us, immigration and the nation state in the 21st century. We have four speakers, and the first speaker will be Elizabeth Chizakis, who's a professor at Kenyatta College and a longtime activist and author of many articles in the ISR. She's the editor of Justin Akers Chacon's No One Is Illegal, which you can get at Haymarket Books, and Justin is here today too, so we will hear from him. And of course we're very, very proud and lucky to have Nativo Lopez. Nativo is the president of the Mexican-American Political Association and leader of the May Day demonstrations in 2006 and a longtime civil rights leader in general. And we're very lucky to have him here today because currently he's facing bogus charges from the state of California on four felony counts in an obvious attempt to intimidate the immigrants' rights movement and working class people. And so we're proud to have this opportunity to show our solidarity for Nativo. And we're also honoured to have in our presence two workers from the Overhill Farm who are struggling against the racist injustice of mass firings of 254 workers there. And they will speak more about that and tell you about their struggle. Isela and Marcelino. So we're going to run this meeting much like the others, and we'll get the speakers time to talk, and then we'll come back for discussion afterwards. So.
Thanks, Josh. Just this past Wednesday, July 1st, the Obama administration announced that it had launched investigations of hundreds of businesses around the country as part of its strategy to focus immigration enforcement on the employers who hire undocumented workers. Now, these investigations, not to call them crackdowns, had already begun well before this past Wednesday with the Social Security audit and consequent firing of 254 workers at Overhill Farms in Vernon, California on May 31st, as Nativo and Isela and Marcelino will no doubt talk about and as Josh has mentioned. Now, on June 17th, labor writer David Bacon called the Overhill firings, quote, a window into the future of immigration enforcement, and that future is now. It began Wednesday when ICE officers served notices of inspection to 652 businesses. 652 in one day compared to 503 such notices issued to businesses in all of last year. David just said the first part. Businesses were chosen for inspections based on, quote, leads and other investigative work, according to ICE officials. Now, this going after the employers, I think, is really very clever because it makes it seem as if Obama is not going after the workers, and nothing could actually be further from the truth. But what I would like to do is to go back in time a little bit and put some context behind Wednesday's announcement that the Obama administration would be going after the employers who hire undocumented workers. On Friday, June 19th, Obama spoke at a Hispanic prayer breakfast, and he had this to say, and now I'm quoting Obama. The American people believe in immigration, but they also believe that we can't tolerate a situation where people come to the United States in violation of the law. Nor can we tolerate employers who exploit undocumented workers in order to drive down wages. That's why we're taking steps to strengthen border security, and we must build on those efforts. Enforcement first. We must also clarify the status of millions who are here illegally, many who have put down roots. And I want to emphasize this last part because it's what I'm going to be talking about. For those who wish to become citizens, we should require them to pay a penalty and pay taxes, learn English, go to the back of the line behind those who played by the rules. That is the fair, practical, and promising way forward. And that's what I'm committed to passing as President of the United States. Okay? Go to the back of the line. Now, I'm sure that Nativo and Isela and Marcelina will talk about how this intolerance for employers who exploit undocumented workers in order to drive down wages in reality translates into people who have been working hard for decades to make money for U.S. corporations being treated like criminals at best and terrorists at worst. But I would like to spend a few minutes talking about why some folks might not have been willing to wait to go to the end of the line or get back at the end of the line and play by the rules. Why some people might have been in kind of a hurry to skip to the front and get jobs. Okay, and it starts way back when. This is going to be like a brief history of U.S. imperialism in Mexico. I'm going to go very quick. Feel free to ask questions. Now, the first time, arguably, that the border crossed us was back in 1846 to 48 with the Mexican-American War, which was a war of U.S. expansion. And you may be wondering how I, clearly not Mexican, would be saying us, okay? I want to say that we should start thinking of ourselves as part of the working classes of the Americas, because the destinies of the working classes of North America, Central America, and South America are inextricably linked in a way that just becomes clearer and clearer to me every day. The border moving up in, north did nothing for the U.S. working class, nothing good. The Mexican-American War ended with the U.S. taking by force California, Nevada, and other parts of Old Mexico, territories that held 75% of Mexico's natural resources. This fact has done nothing but hurt the American working class, and that's why I think we need to see ourselves as one big working class. Now, south of the border, American companies came to own a great share of business in Mexico. For instance, by the 1920s, they owned 80% of Mexican railroads, 81% of mining capital, and 61% of investment in oil fields. Then the Mexican Revolution kicked out the government that was compliant to U.S. business interests, and it nationalized a lot of those portions of the economy and redistributed land to the poor. The world economic scene changed after World War II, and the Mexican capitalist class started to invest in export-oriented agriculture, undermining the position of smaller farmers and pushing them off the farms into the cities. And that was just the beginning of the process. By the 80s, Mexico also accepted the neoliberal terms of the United States. And I just want to make clear, like, it's been worse for the Mexican working class, obviously, but I don't want people to think that, you know, hurting the Mexican working class helps the American working class. It doesn't. It hurts us, too. Mexico then would go on to accept loans from the International Monetary Funds, you can hiss for that too, to fund pet projects of Mexican capitalists. These loans carry conditions that Mexico would begin to privatize some of the nationalized parts of the economy. Mexico would allow foreign companies to operate in the country, invest in export-oriented production, and sap the profit made off of the labor of Mexican workers to other countries. Like many countries with IMF loans, Mexico entered into a state of perpetual debt. Okay. If that wasn't enough, the next thing that happened was NAFTA. NAFTA stands for the North... Yeah, hiss for that too. NAFTA stands for the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's a trilateral free trade agreement, free trade, that was signed in 1994 between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And its purported purpose was to break down trade barriers between the countries. And in the process, we were promised that thousands, hundreds of thousands of jobs would be created each year. Like with every other so-called free trade agreement, NAFTA really has been a gift to the super rich in all countries, while being an absolute disaster for working people in all countries, especially those in Mexico. And from the 1970s on, the rich were facing a crisis of profitability, and they saw these programs as necessary for them to restore their profits by cutting down labor costs. So what did NAFTA do? In Mexico, NAFTA drove many to lose their jobs, leading to mass migration. Many people moved into the cities in Mexico. Other ones moved up to the border area, and some people came up into the United States. NAFTA displaced even more when cheap grain from the United States, subsidized by U.S. tax dollars, beat out small farmers who didn't receive subsidies from the Mexican government. 1.3 million farmers were displaced between 1994 and 2004. The last count I read was 2 million farmers displaced, and estimates are that as many as 15 million could be displaced in the end. NAFTA, with a little help from the IMF, led to the tortilla crisis of 2007. In the country that invented corn, tortilla prices jumped 60% because of the machinations of neoliberals and the companies they serve, like Cargill and Archer Daniels Midland. They reported record profits at the same time that tens of thousands of Mexicans took to the street because they didn't have enough money to buy food. The effects of NAFTA and economic crisis created an exodus of folks from the south up to the north, again, some to the border region, most into the United States. NAFTA brought down the wages of workers in all three countries as it forced them to compete to the bottom. The adverse effects of NAFTA on the Mexican economy are spelled out in the business pages every day. For instance, in the Wall Street Journal just yesterday, I learned that Mexico sends more than 80% of its exports to the U.S., and that leaves the Mexico reliant on the U.S. economy. Mexico's economy shrank because of the recession here by 5.9% in the first quarter of 2008, showing the economy in its steepest decline since the depths of the 1995 peso crisis, 1 year after NAFTA took effect. The ways in which NAFTA and other neoliberal policies have hurt the Mexican economy go on and on. Economists say from the Wall Street Journal say that the downturn has been exacerbated by the swine flu outbreak, which shut down Mexico City for about a week, and is continuing to hit tourism. And in May, which is like a very high tourist month, the hotels in Cancun were at 26% occupancy. They're usually at 74%. Because the people are sitting around, they have nothing to do. Now, the swine flu epidemic is also a product of globalization. According to Latin American scholar Laura Carlson, Mexico has long been considered the laboratory of globalization, and she writes that in that laboratory, the swine flu virus found, quote, ideal conditions to move quickly along a path towards a global pandemic. Those conditions include a rapid transition from small livestock production to industrial meat farms after NAFTA established incentives for foreign investment, the failed decentralization of Mexico's health system along lines established by multilateral lending banks, lax and non-enforced environmental and health regulations as the Mexican government was forced to downsize, and the increased flow of goods and persons across borders, and restricted access to life-saving medicines due to NAFTA intellectual property monopolies for pharmaceutical companies. So big, dirty, unhygienic farms, a destruction of the Mexican health service, and basically profiteering on the parts of pharmaceuticals. Like, they didn't want to give medicine. They didn't want Mexico to make its own medicines because they wanted to protect their intellectual property rights. Now, according to Carlson, the first reports of people getting sick from the flu came from Veracruz, where a company named Smithfield, who you all may have heard of, owns a gigantic hog farm. And they set up operations in what year, can you guess? 1994, right when NAFTA was passed. Okay. They also have legal problems in the United States. On August 8th, a federal court judge in Virginia imposed a $12.6 million fine on Smithfield Foods for violation of the Clean Water Act. If they're willing to do that here, you can imagine what they're willing to do in a Mexico whose environmental regulations have been stripped by NAFTA. I have to skip through this, but basically, Laura Carlson makes an argument that the swine flu started at this farm. The government in Mexico is denying it, but no one is willing to really get into it and do the kind of examination it needs to say. She also talks about how globalization has depressed people's immune systems by forcing them to live in bad conditions in the cities, and the privatization of the healthcare system really, really weakened it and made it hard for it to care for Mexican people, although they did a better job in a lot of cases than places in the U.S. dealing with the problem. What does the Wall Street Journal propose to deal with this problem? Of course, they propose more of the same. They said, This is May 21st. Since the North American Free Trade Agreement took effect in 1994, Mexico hasn't managed a big overhaul of its economy to keep ahead of rivals like China, India, and Brazil. Much of the economy, from oil to telecommunications, is dominated by state or private monopolies that stifle competition and create high costs. And this is the kicker. Labor laws make hiring and firing difficult. Okay? 1 million people a year are losing their jobs in Mexico, and the problem is it's too hard to fire people. So that's the context in which Obama announced his offensive against employers who hire undocumented immigrants. And before I wrap up and turn it over to Nativo and Isela and Marcelino, I want to say a few words about lesser evilism and the labor movement in this country. Now, sometimes the labor movement does the right thing. So in 2007, when the Bush administration proposed a regulation that would have forced employers to fire any worker using a Social Security number that doesn't match the Social Security database, the AFL, the ACLU, and the National Immigration Law Center won a federal court injunction against it, and that still stands. And again, according to David Bacon, many expected the incoming Obama administration to drop Bush's no-match rule and put E-Verify on hold. That's the system that they use. Instead, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano announced that the Department of Homeland Security will, quote, work to maintain a legal workforce through training and employee verification tools like E-Verify. That is, the Obama administration is just continuing with the Bush program. And the White House website says, and President Obama said himself, that his administration will remove incentives to enter the country illegally by preventing employers from hiring undocumented workers. Now, people in the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights movement have been saying that when it comes to their rights, President Obama should be very angry with candidate Obama because candidate Obama made a lot of promises to them and that he should keep them, okay? Unfortunately, I don't know why many expected the incoming administration to drop Bush's no-match rule and put E-Verify on hold, because unfortunately, immigration is the one area where Obama is keeping his campaign promises. He is doing exactly what he said he was going to do. And I checked his campaign website. It's still up. You can look at it yourself. Everything that is happening now is what he promised to do. Now, I bring this up to point to the dangers of lesser evilism. Because if you vote for something that you don't want, sometimes you get it. And that's what has happened with Obama and immigration. At the Hispanic prayer breakfast, in addition to, I'm almost done, indicating his willingness to keep these particular campaign promises, Obama also noted that the U.S. is not just a nation of immigrants, it is a nation of laws, he said. And he said, those things aren't contradictory, they're complementary. That's why I'm committed to passing comprehensive immigration reform as President of the United States. And I think that this is the question before immigrants' rights activists and the labor movement right now. What do we make of the so-called complementary nature of the laws as they stand in immigration? David Bacon said, when Overhill Farms says it's firing 254 employees for bad Social Security numbers, it's acting in accordance with the law. And this is only in some cases, because some people... Social Security numbers are actually fine, and they just wanted to fire them because they're union activists, but they'll talk about that. We have to choose right now whether or not to defend the undocumented workers that the policy targets. Parts of the labor movement and parts of the immigrants' rights movement are not doing this. In 1999, the AFL-CIO called for the repeal of sanctions because they were being used against workers who were trying to organize and improve conditions. But a new joint statement by the AFL-CIO and the Change to Win Labor Federation supports, quote, secure and effective worker authorization mechanisms. Okay, so they've changed their position, and now they're saying, oh, yeah, we need to have a law that's going to make people come into the country legally. And I think this is a really bad call. I think that the choice is obvious. We have to defend the workers who have been fired. They have a right, not a legal right at the moment, but a human right to work and to have a share of the wealth that they have created. They have a right to stay in their homes and with their families. And given the current state of the economy, we know that the ruling class in the United States and Mexico, too, are looking for scapegoats. Their economic policies have created a crisis. They want to claim it's a crisis in immigration. It's not. They want to look like they're doing something about unemployment. To them, firing immigrants looks like doing something about unemployment. I hope I don't have to explain how ridiculous that is. We do need immigration reform in this country, but we need immigration law that serves workers, all workers, the whole working class of the Americas. The bosses are clear about what they want. They know that they need immigrant workers. What they want, that they want them with as few rights, right, and as little power as possible. They want to have them cheaply. Any law that's based on that premise, as I said before, is going to be bad for the U.S. working class and the working class in Mexico. It's a law that we have to break. And I want to end with a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King from the letter from a Birmingham jail on the question of laws. He said, "One may well ask, how can you advocate breaking some laws and obeying others? The answer lies in the fact that there are two types of laws, just and unjust. I would be the first to advocate obeying just laws. One has not only a legal but a moral responsibility to obey just laws. Conversely, one has a moral responsibility to disobey unjust laws. I would agree with St. Augustine that an unjust law is no law at all. Laws that say that people like Isela and Marcelino do not have a right to work in this country after spending all the time that they did making profits for that company, that is an unjust law. It's a law that we should resist, and we should encourage the people in our unions and in our immigrant rights organizations to do the same. Thank you."
Elizabeth just gave my speech. That was great. That was excellent. Excellent. So, I want to be very, very brief because I really want you to share in the presentations that my brother and sister, that leaders, worker leaders that came from this particular company, Overhill Farms, came to share with you all today. And you have the opportunity to speak with them. Probably the most, I don't want to say that this is so peculiar or so singular, but certainly in the immigrant community, it has characteristics of being singular and peculiar. 300 workers fired from their jobs, and these workers organized independently and have been protesting in front of the factory on a weekly basis and fanning out throughout the community and going to companies that buy product from this company to conduct their own consumer education campaign to teach and to educate the community about the wrongs, the harm, the racism, the discrimination of this employer and their willingness to fight back, not take it sitting down, not disperse and go off to the four corners to find other employment, but to stand up and fight back. And that is peculiar, and that is singular, and that is worth a tremendous applause from you to both Isela and to Marcelino. And just a brief context for their presentation. That particular company, Overhill Farms, and if you haven't received this flyer, I recommend that you ask Marcelino and Isela for a copy of it because it gives a good summary of what happened at that company. But it sits in a city in Los Angeles County, the city of Vernon, over 1,000 manufacturing and distribution warehouses in that city. Less than 1% of the workers in that area are organized into a union. And some have even offered that that's probably a high number. Generally speaking, all immigrant workforce, high rate of undocumented workforce, and only three unions that really operate in that area, Unite. I don't know if you can say Unite here or Unite anymore, but it's just United Food and Commercial Workers and the Teamsters. Generally, mediocre contracts, but an important baseline bump above no representation at all. So there is a difference between even having a mediocre contract and not having any representation at all, because it means there's a modicum of instrument to fight back. Raids are common. No match letter to the employers are common. Therefore, employers releasing, terminating, firing workers using no match as a pretext. No safety net whatsoever for these workers. an insecure work situation, mixed status, but a high rate of undocumented, a classic reserve army of labor within the United States. Salud. Overhill Farms, then, is the largest employer of that region, close to 1,000 workers, the largest food processing manufacturing company probably in California, both for manufacturers and prepackages the food products that we buy at El Pollo Loco, Jenny Craig, the airlines, Sam Clubs, Safeway, most of the grocery chains, and other fast food outlets. It has a union contract, United Food and Commercial Workers, and this particular company anticipated the Obama policy by 2 months, terminating 300 workers using the no-match letter as a pretext, even though the Social Security Administration letter to both the employer and to the employee states this discrepancy of Social Security information is not a cause for termination, layoff, or suspension of your duties, work duties. And I would say that they anticipated Obama's policy of what I've come to call Operation Squeeze the Employer. Employers have now de facto become an extension of the Immigration and Custom Enforcement, ICE. It's a more pernicious, pervasive, sweeping, and efficient policy from a cost-benefit analysis than anything that Bush did in the 8 years that he was in office. So efficient, probably even more efficient than the Nazis running the trains in occupied Europe at that time. Why? Because it doesn't have the specter of agents surrounding the company, but it has the most powerful agent now empowered with the Obama dictate to terminate any worker that they suspect of not having status. No agents at banging on the door. Just an instruction to the employers of what they have to do or that they will face criminal penalties by this administration. It's a policy of enforcement first, legalization last. In reality, no immigration reform in 2009, a general assault on the immigrant workers and their families. And when he says, go to the back of the line, brothers and sisters, with no disrespect to me, as a Mexican and as an activist for many years, I interpret that as someone telling an African American to go to the back of the bus. So the response that we're taking to this situation, both the Obama presentation of his concept of immigration reform and the specific policy of squeezing the employers is our slogan and campaign targeting the Obama administration. And I'm not going to open my shirt because I'm Superman, but this is the slogan. Legalize America now. And I'm not referring to marijuana, right? So we're demanding of the Obama administration executive orders, action in support of immigrants, diametrically opposite to what the Bush administration did in using executive order latitude and discretion against immigrants. He has tremendous executive order discretion and latitude, and he absolutely refuses to use it and is just deferring to Congress, and it's just a canard and a maneuver on his part. Secondly, we have joined a call made by, interestingly, one of the most conservative, from a religious perspective, 20,000 member coalition of evangelical Christian Latino churches who have called for a boycott of the U.S. Census. If the government, if we can't count on the government, on the contrary, if the government is persecuting us, then we're saying, don't count us on the census. Screw you. screw your census, we will not be counted, and we're going to boycott the U.S. Census for the next 2 years and see how they like that as our response to what Obama is doing to our community. Thirdly, an organized resistance and organizing a new independent union, our union that's called the General Brotherhood of Workers, International Union, organizing workers from the bottom up, and workers organizing themselves independently, either with existing unions, because they're not doing their job, or independent of those unions. And in this particular case, the United Food and Commercial Workers, and Isela and Marcelino will talk about that, had absolutely no intention whatsoever of defending their own members. Fourthly, engage the labor movement. In other words, developing an independent expression is not diametrically opposed of working within the existing labor movement and to continue cajoling and persuading and carrying on the debate and the fight within the labor movement to make them do the job that they're supposed to do. And lastly, we've created a defense committee against the attacks by both the state, its local expression of the state, the California Secretary of State, and the District Attorney of Los Angeles County, who has charged me with 4 felony counts alleging fraud in the use of a domicile for voter registration and for voting purposes. Both the state and the employer, because the employer turned around within that same week and filed a civil lawsuit against myself and 6 of the workers alleging defamation because we call them a racist, alleging extortion because we're out there picketing every day demanding that he rehire the 300 workers that he fired, and also that we are intentionally interfering with his economic activity to make a profit. So it's a dual attack by the state and the boss against this movement to break the back of this independent movement, and I'm proud to tell you that these workers are taking the fight to the employer, they're taking the fight to the union, and they're taking the fight to the community and demanding their rights, irrespective of status. You know, when some of these news outlets ask them about their status, you know, the workers tell them, that's irrelevant. I'm a worker and I create wealth, and that's why I deserve to have my job back. Thank you.
Gracias por estar aquí.
Thank you for being here.
Mi nombre es Isela Hernández.
My name is Isela Hernández.
Tengo 33 años y soy madre soltera.
I am 33 years old and I am a single mother.
Trabajé para la compañía Overhill Farms poco más de 9 años.
I worked for the company Overhill Farms a little less than, ¿cuántos años otra vez?
9
years.
La compañía nos despidió a casi 300 personas por supuestamente discrepancia en el seguro social.
The company fired me for supposed discrepancies in my social security.
Cuando la institución de seguro social dice que eso no es causa de despido.
Even though the Social Security Administration says that is not cause for a firing.
Aún así ellos nos despidieron.
Even under those circumstances, they still fired me.
Un tiempo supuestamente para nosotros arreglar esa situación.
They supposedly gave us some days to figure out the situation.
Hubo compañeros que comenzaron a llevar sus documentos.
There were coworkers who were taking their documents.
Pero aún así fueron despedidos.
But even under those circumstances, they were also fired.
Esto nos dio a nosotros a entender que solamente fue una maniobra de la compañía para sacar gente con señoría y con beneficios.
This to us was an understanding that it was a move on their behalf to get rid of workers with seniority and medical benefits.
Sin importarle los años de trabajo que le dimos nosotros.
Without caring about all the years that we gave them of our work.
Que gracias a nuestro trabajo, a nuestro esfuerzo, la compañía creció desde hace 30 años.
That thanks to our work and sacrifice, the company has grown.
Y a ella no le importó despedirnos y quitarnos aseguranza inmediatamente cuando se le pidió un tiempo más de aseguranza y ella contestó no podemos darle ese tiempo porque eso implica $60,000 de gastos para ellos.
So she also said that the company was very inconsiderate and immediately stopped all benefits, saying that it would cost them $60,000 in money that they weren't gonna pay.
Cuando que son $60,000 para una compañía que gana $1,000,000 al año.
What is $60,000 a year to a company that makes $1,000,000 a year?
Ahí muestra realmente la el desagrado. No agradece los años que le dimos. No le importó que hay personas, mujeres embarazadas en este momento, que ella despidió personas lesionadas por el mismo trabajo que se hace en esa compañía. No le importó que habemos más como yo, madres solteras, que tenemos que, somos cabeza de familia. No le importó.
Okay. She said that this company did not demonstrate any care for the people who were had given so many years to the company, single mothers like herself, women who were pregnant, people who were injured because of the type of work that they were engaging for so many years.
Y nosotros realmente no sabíamos qué hacer porque la unión que nosotros tenemos, que ahora entendemos que no es nada hacia nosotros, nos decía, no se puede hacer nada, busquen otro trabajo.
And she also said that, I think I forgot what she just said. She said that the union that they had, she understood that the union that they had was not important, didn't do anything for them. They didn't take any care or to take any action for the workers. Oh, told them actually to look for another job.
Uh-huh. Pero gracias a Dios, digo gracias a Dios, porque nos encontramos con Nativo López.
And I say thanks to God, because we found Nativo López.
La Hermandad Mexicana.
From, and Hermandad Mexicana.
Que nos ha estado apoyando y nos ha estado enseñando.
That has been supporting us and teaching us.
Cosas en tan poco tiempo.
In such little time that.
Que la UFCW no nos
enseñó en tantos años. That the UFCW never taught us in all the years they were there.
Ahora sabes. Ahora sabemos que nosotros mismos somos la unión y que nosotros mismos tenemos la fuerza para luchar por nuestros derechos, porque son nuestros derechos.
Now she knows that it is not up to them, it is up to, now she knows that it is empowering for them because they are the workers, it is their union, they are there to defend themselves and their rights.
Porque como seres humanos es nuestro derecho y como trabajadores que nosotros hemos contribuido tanto al desarrollo de esa compañía como al desarrollo de este país.
Because as human beings, we deserve the right and for the development and the of this country and the development of the development of the company and as well as the development of this country as a whole.
Nosotros ahora estamos todos nuestros compañeros que estamos despedidos y los compañeros que aún estamos dentro, que aún están dentro de la compañía, estamos luchando, estamos haciendo protestas frente a la compañía, pidiendo justicia para nosotros, pidiendo nuestros empleos de regreso, pidiendo porque la compañía nos despidió a los de señoría para contratar gente nueva de medio tiempo.
So she's saying that now the her and her coworkers are demanding justice by doing the actions outside, demanding their job back, demanding their seniority, and
okay, la compañía contrata ahora gente de medio tiempo.
Now the company is hiring people part-time.
Sin beneficios.
Without benefits.
Pero trabajando más de 13 horas. Solo están clasificados como
medio tiempo. But working more than 13 hours a day, but still classifying them as part-time.
Es ahí donde miramos que solamente es solo una estrategia económica de la compañía.
Is there where we saw that this was a strategic economic move on behalf of the company to fire them?
Okay. Así que así, estamos luchando.
That's why we're fighting with protests.
Nombrando a la compañía injusta y racista,
calling the company unfair and racist, which is something that bothered them.
Pero ¿por qué le molesta si realmente es racista?
But why does it bother them if they really are racist?
Porque se aprovecha de
because they're taking advantage of us
para pagar
to be able to pay
poco dinero por trabajo,
little money for our work.
Realmente. And solamente estamos pidiendo ayuda también.
We're only asking for help now.
Para las protestas que estamos haciendo.
For the protests that we're doing.
El boycott contra los productos que OVC Farms produce.
The boycott of the products that the company produces.
Y hacerle saber a las demás personas lo que está sucediendo and ahora con nuestra gente.
And to let other people know what's happening with our people.
Y pedirle al presidente una reforma migratoria justa para nosotros.
And also asking the president for just immigration reform. And that's it. Thank you.
Antes que nada, muchas gracias a todos por darme la oportunidad de venir a contarles nuestra situación, la mala experiencia que estamos viviendo, pero que sin embargo estamos seguros que de esto vamos a sacar una buena experiencia.
Yes, first of all, I would like to thank you guys for giving me the opportunity to be here to let you guys know about my experience and what I have gone through. No sé si es todo. And that we're going to get a good experience out of it. Thank you. Crowd participation.
Okay.
I love this.
En primer lugar, quiero subrayar algo que dijo mi compañera Isela. No sé si escuché mal o algo.
So first I would like to highlight something that my partner Isela said here.
Con respecto a que la compañía no estuvo dispuesta a pagar $60,000 por
with
darles...
With respect to that the company wasn't willing to pay this $60,000.
Por extenderles un mes el plazo de la aseguranza.
To be able to extend the medical benefits for a month after.
Cuando el patrón, el mero jefe de la compañía gana casi $1,000,000, no la compañía.
When the main boss or the president earns close to $1,000,000 a year alone.
Estamos hablando de una compañía que está siendo de 18 millones de dólares al año para arriba. Eso es lo que
we're
declaran.
We're talking about a company that's earning or making $18 million a year and above of profits.
Okay. En segundo término,
second,
quiero manifestarles que la compañía no solamente fue más allá de despedir a estas personas, estas 254 personas.
And I also want to express to you that the company didn't just go... didn't just fire the 300, close to 300 employees.
Cuando alegó sobre la discrepancia que ya mencionó mi compañera.
When it came to the discrepancy that my compañera has mentioned to you.
Y cuando los compañeros cumplieron los requisitos que estaba solicitando.
And when our other coworkers fulfilled the requirements that they were requesting.
Y sin embargo la compañía en el momento que recibió esos requisitos dijo, ¿sabes qué? Tú nos diste información falsa cuando llenaste la aplicación. Estás despedido.
They said, you know what? You gave us false information to begin with. You're still fired.
Adicional a esto, la compañía no tomó en cuenta que había personas embarazadas.
In addition to this, the company did not take into account that there were people who were pregnant.
Personas que sufren de enfermedades muy delicadas. Estoy hablando, por ejemplo, una persona que ha recibido varias operaciones de la cabeza.
People who have certain terminal illnesses or chronic illnesses, such as someone who had received various surgeries in their brain.
Y sin embargo, estaba deshabilitada hasta agosto.
And was disabled until August.
Pero la compañía dijo, ¿sabes qué? A mitad de julio ya no tienes aseguranza.
But the company said, mid-June you don't have any... You don't have any more insurance.
Adicionalmente a esto, todavía tiene el descaro de decir.
In addition to this, is they still have the audacity to say
que los trabajadores que están siendo despedidos fueron los trabajadores muy leales a la compañía.
That the workers who were fired were the ones that were most loyal to the company.
Pero sin embargo, con sus hechos está demostrando todo lo contrario.
But with their acts, they're showing the contrary.
So, a raíz de esto, como mencionó nuestra compañera, nos organizamos nosotros sin contar con el apoyo de nuestra unión.
So, like my coworker said, we have organized ourselves without the support of the union, which is the UFCW.
El local 770.
Local 770.
Y gracias a esta organización y gracias al apoyo de mi amigo nativo, porque ya no lo considero un compañero, en estos dos meses yo lo considero como un verdadero amigo.
And thanks to the organization that we formed and also the support of my friend, because now I consider him a friend in the 2 months that I've known him nativo.
Hemos logrado iniciar este movimiento.
We have decided to initiate this movement.
Acabe destacar que yo no fui de ese grupo que la compañía sacó inicialmente por discrepancia del Seguro Social.
I was not one of those initial people who was fired in the 300 because of the discrepancies.
Sin embargo, yo desde el momento que me di cuenta que la compañía estaba maniobrando de una manera injusta con los trabajadores, yo les brindé siempre mi apoyo.
However, when I found out the moves that the company was taking that were unfair, he gave 100% support to his coworkers that were fired.
Empecé a organizar a la gente dentro de la compañía, concientizarla de lo que estaba pasando.
I started organizing people inside of the shop and raising their consciousness as to what was actually happening.
A mí no me importó ni me dio miedo participar con ellos en las protestas en frente de la compañía.
I didn't care nor was I scared to participate in actions in front of the company.
A raíz de esto, la compañía me mandó llamar y me dijo, ¿sabes qué? Tú estás haciendo un daño a la compañía.
In light of this, the company called me in and told me that I was harming the company.
A lo que yo les dije, ¿sabes qué? Yo estoy haciendo el apoyo a mis compañeros porque es algo injusto y lo estoy haciendo fuera de mi horario de trabajo. Es un tiempo mío y no te pertenece a ti.
To what I said, I think that what you are doing to my coworkers is unfair, and what I'm doing is outside of my work hours, and it's my time.
Sin embargo, la compañía dijo, nosotros no queremos ese tipo de empleados aquí. No son buenos empleados recibidos que estén trabajando en mi compañía.
However, the company told him that they didn't want those type of employees, that was not a good employee for their company.
A raíz de eso, me dijeron, está suspendido a proceso de investigación.
In light of that, they told him that he was going to be suspended and in the process of investigation.
Al igual que los compañeros más que habían apoyado el movimiento.
And the same happened to other workers inside who were also supporting the movement outside.
3 días después de esto, nos mandaron llamar para decirnos, ¿sabes qué? Ya no trabajas aquí. No eres más trabajador de Vergil.
3 days later, they called him and his other fellow coworkers in the same situation to tell them that they no longer worked for Overhill Farms.
En primer término, nosotros hicimos el agravio ante la unión.
And so, to begin with, they filed a grievance with the union.
Y en segundo lugar, nosotros nos presentamos ante el Departamento de Relaciones Laborales.
And secondly, they showed in front of the Department of the National Labor Relations Board.
Como buscando una protección porque realmente la unión no nos está respondiendo.
Like looking for a form of protection because the union wasn't responding.
Ahora, yo pienso que a raíz de esto,
I think that in light of this,
en primer lugar que Nativo fue demandado,
and first they put a lawsuit against Nativo,
lo acompañamos 6 líderes también. Nosotros también estamos demandados por la compañía.
Also 6 other leaders are facing charges along with Nativo.
Por difamación y por causar daños a la compañía.
For defamation and for causing damages to the company.
So, ese es el momento que nosotros estamos aquí y hemos estado en muchos lados solicitando el apoyo de varias organizaciones.
So that is the reason why we've been in other places and we're here asking for your help.
Porque nosotros pensamos que mucho más allá de la demanda que está recibiendo Nativo, estamos recibiendo nosotros, de la demanda que está recibiendo por parte de la Corte.
Because they also consider that the lawsuit that they are receiving, and Nativo is receiving, also on behalf of the court.
Está interconectado una cosa con otro.
These are all interconnected.
Por esa razón, nosotros pensamos que en el momento que están agrediendo a Nativo, nos están agrediendo a nosotros.
For that reason, when they are looking to harm Nativo, they are also looking to harm us.
Y como Nativo nos enseñó y hemos aprendido,
and like Nativo has shown us and we have also learned,
nosotros vamos a seguir luchando.
We're going to continue fighting
hasta las últimas consecuencias,
until the last consequences.
Y estamos seguros que con el apoyo de organizaciones, con el apoyo de gente como ustedes,
and I am sure that with the help of organizations and with the help from people like you,
Vamos a demostrar a la compañía que a pesar de tanto dinero que tiene y que nosotros no lo tenemos, les vamos a ganar.
We're going to show that even though we might not have the money that the company has, we're still going to win.
Y más que eso, vamos a demostrar que nosotros como trabajadores,
and above that, we're going to show to them that us as workers,
estamos conscientes que esta lucha va más allá de Overhill.
We are conscientious of the fact that this fight goes beyond Overhill.
Y que estamos conscientes que en el momento que pisotean a mi compañero, me están pisoteando a mí.
And we are aware that the moment that they step on my fellow coworker, they're stepping on me.
Y por eso debemos extender esto con toda la, con todos los compañeros en las demás compañías.
And that's why we want to extend this with fellow brothers and sisters in other companies.
Y como lo mencionó Nativo, ser un buen paso para dirigirnos hacia lo que es la reforma migratoria.
And like Nativo mentioned earlier, to be a good step towards immigration reform.
Porque nosotros somos trabajadores y trabajamos duro y hacemos un buen trabajo.
Because we are hard workers, we work hard and we do a good job.
Y gracias a nosotros esta economía ha sido una economía grande.
And thanks to us, this economy has been a big one.
Y no somos criminales ni somos terroristas como muchos nos están tachando, nos están subrayando.
And we are not criminals, we are not terrorists, as many people are trying to call us.
Porque dentro de esta misma compañía, cuando inició todo este el momento que sacaron a la gente, también hubo cuatro compañeros que están siendo acusados de bioterrorismo.
Because inside of all these other charges, there are four additional coworkers who are also being charged with bioterrorism charges.
Y pues por eso estamos solicitando su ayuda. Ahorita nosotros, más que nada, como mencionaron, el boicot nacional contra productos que hace Overhill Farms.
So that's why right now we're asking for your help with the national boycott against Overhill Farms.
Si tienen la posibilidad de ayudarnos a repartir volantes, ahorita estamos específicamente en todos los Panda Express.
Right now, if you can even help us hand out flyers, right now we are handing out flyers at Panda Express.
Estamos iniciando marchas todos los martes en frente de la compañía.
We're doing marches in front of the company every Tuesday.
Y cualquier persona es bienvenida cuando gusten apoyarnos.
And any person is welcome to come and support us whenever they can.
Y por último, ya para no dormirlos.
And finally, to not put you to sleep.
Es bien importante que estemos conscientes que también tenemos una lucha no solo con la compañía.
And it's also very important for us to be conscientious that this that is not a fight just against the company.
Tenemos una lucha con los sindicatos.
We have a fight with the unions.
Porque los sindicatos realmente no están haciendo su trabajo a pesar de tanto dinero que se les está pagando.
Because the unions aren't doing their job even after the fact that we're giving them so much money.
E incluso nosotros tenemos la sospecha que el mismo sindicato y la compañía están haciendo todo esto en contra de Nativo y están en complicidad contra lo que nos están haciendo a nosotros.
We even suspect that the union is in with the bosses to take action against Nativo and affect the workers as well.
Y pues, una vez más reiterarles, esperemos que obtengamos su apoyo.
So again, I reiterate to you that I hope that we can get your support.
Y que tengamos la justicia para Nativo. Tengamos la justicia para los trabajadores de Overhill Farms y tengamos la justicia para todos, porque todos nos la merecemos porque venimos a trabajar aquí y con muchas ganas. Gracias por escucharme, compañero.
So that's a mark that he hopes that we can achieve justice for Nativo, justice for the workers at Overhill Farms, and justice for everyone because we all deserve it.
Thank you, comrades. Thank you, Natalie, for translating.
Sorry,
nothing to apologize for. So, that's
Bella. Can we clap for Natalie?
Yeah. That should be our last chanting because there's another meeting going on next door and they won't be able to hear a thing. But, you know, we can chant silently. Raise some fists. Yeah. So I'm going to be... We've got to be out of here at 5:30, which means we've only got half an hour, and I want to give a lot of time for people to come back, so people can just... If people raise their hands, we're going to run it like normal, except you're not going to have as much time to speak. So get your hands up, and I'll call on you, and I'll get through as many people as possible. I think, so keep your hands up, and I'll... Yeah.
Okay, just a quick question. Is there a division in the ruling class about whether they really want undocumented workers or not? Because it seems like they're going back and forth on these, like some want it, some don't. I'm not sure how that plays into this.
Okay, in the blue shirt.
My question was just about, you mentioned very briefly the census and not participating in it. And I know that recently Michelle Bachman was kind of saying the same thing for her constituency. So I'm just kind of curious, like, how it can be used by the left wing and how you intend to use it and why.
Okay, so... Yeah, so we've got a lot of questions on the floor, and I'm going to collect a few more before we go back because we won't have time otherwise to get much out. So, in the one solution.
Okay, no question.
That's all right. Comments are okay.
I'm Brian from Olympia, Washington, but I also live in a rural town in southwest Mexico part of the time. And since we were talking about NAFTA, I wanted to talk a little bit about the effect of it there, very briefly. When NAFTA was implemented, the standing land reform program of the Mexican government was also gutted at the same time. The family communal farms, the ejidos, were allowed to be sold off privately. The government assistance to them was withdrawn and put into assistance for corporate export farming. And this drove many people in the country off. First, they could go to the U.S. At great risk and expense. They could go and work in the maquiladoras, the border factories, at great risk to their health. Or they could go to the cities. Just about any intersection, busy intersection in Mexico City, you see people trying to sell all kinds of things, trying to do juggling hats and get a few pesos, even fire eating. I even saw one of the fire eaters this year that looked like he was maybe 9 years old. And that's the rural areas. Not everybody has left them. Some of them go out to work as day laborers on these corporate farms. And a labor contractor comes around, and they bid down their wages. They say, I'll work for 50 pesos. I'll work for 45 pesos today. That's what it's going to
do.
I'll be very brief. I want to pass around a couple buckets because, Nativo and the other folks from Overhill spoke about the lawsuits and the four felony charges being put against Nativo, and that means a couple things. One is they're threatening some of the most important workers and civil rights activists in our state and in our country with these outrageous charges, and we are not going to let that stand. We're going to create up and down the West Coast and across the country a defense campaign so that they lose this fight, so that they know they cannot put these bogus charges on our folks. That's number one. Number two, that takes up a lot of money. Why are they putting these charges? Because they want to drain the resources of the workers, so they have to spend the money on the lawyers, they have to go to court and all that. Nativo has to go in for arraignment on Wednesday on four felony charges. This is completely outrageous. They didn't put Madoff in for four felony charges. It's insane. So I'm just going to pass around some buckets. We're going to develop a defense campaign across this country. And actually, that's all wet, so I'm just going to use one. So we just got to pass around. People should put in what they can. Dollar bills are quieter than change. And make checks to... Should we make checks? Is there a defense fund?
Actually, it's called Justice for Nativo and Overhill Farm Workers.
So can they be to... Justice for Nativo, or does it have to be all of them?
No, it could be Justice for Nativo, but it's a combined campaign for the continued organizing.
Okay.
They can empty the space and you can fill it.
No, just Justice for Nativo, and it goes into this joint account.
Okay, this is a commentary. I think I already said what I was going to say. I think if you already have this, the left or to fill it, this paper, please do it, and if you can print it to pass to other people in your cities, and how the what I was thinking, maybe we can, it's my suggestion, to use the first 15 minutes to answer questions, and the second 15 minutes to to hear some suggestions about how we can create this kind of network to support Nativo and the workers. I don't know if it's possible, because I think already we know what's happening with the workers, what lack of defense they have from the union, and already we know that we have to create some alternatives, no? I don't know.
Maybe we should just meet at dinner for people who want to do that. Okay. Right after the session, we'll meet.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of people on the list already. I'm just going to really try and get through everybody, so keep it short. So Victor.
Yeah, and I think just to get at the question somebody asked about why the ruling class doesn't need undocumented workers, yes or no, and they absolutely need undocumented workers. Because thanks to immigration law, they have a group of people in the United States that they can do almost anything to get away with it. And I think that's the point of immigration law. And I think this is the greatest example of how that happens. Another example I think people talked about, Smithfield Foods and what it's doing in Veracruz. While it was, you know, breaking environmental laws or getting away with all these things, there was a union campaign in Tar Heel, in Smithfield Foods, that they called a raid on, you know, to try to destroy that campaign. And it won eventually, which was a great thing, but I think that shows what immigration laws are here. They want to bring undocumented people, they don't want to give them the same rights. And that gives a contradictory view of which this country looks at immigration. I think it is very important what's going on here, because it shows where the next central battle is going to happen in the immigrant rights movement and in the labor movement overall. And I think we have to start challenging some of these things, especially things like E-Verify. Just getting that thing right. They're getting the power from the government to the employer to take advantage, and that just gives them more of a leverage to take advantage of their employees. And I think that's another thing why they want to push forward a guest worker program, which gives a lot of power to the employers. And I think we're going to have to start looking for ways that we're going to battle this in the small battles that are starting on right now, whether it be things like the sickness strike, which maybe other comrades can talk about, or things like this. And, you know, we got to argue to the whole immigrant rights movement that this is where, you know, we want to take it.
Thank you. Kenny, briefly.
Really quick. I just had a couple of questions. I just remember, like, the last amnesty that was passed was under the Reagan administration, and I was wondering, I don't remember if that was an executive or congressional act, and I was just curious what we're fighting for this time around, when, you know, we want to go to Congress. You mentioned the executive power of the president. Is that the route? And then you said that there were four other workers who also named the suit. Should we include their information in the letter to the DA, or is that a separate?
That's a civil lawsuit.
Okay.
Versus the criminal.
So they're not in the criminal indictment.
I just have a question, Nativo, for your in terms of your work with the General Brotherhood, and if you've seen any kind of impact on other labor unions, and if you feel like that's been successful in pressuring them to take a more inclusive stand towards immigrant workers, because I know that's been a problem in the past.
Okay, so I just briefly actually wanted to expand on what Victor was saying, because, like, we have to look at where the ruling class gets their money, right? And I think this speaker spoke to it really well. They get their money from our labor. So, of course, they want to keep wages down, and that's why they hire undocumented workers, and that's why the ruling class needs undocumented workers, and I think Victor spoke to very well about how the guest worker program fits into that. But most importantly, what's really inspiring about, like, what the workers are actually going through is that their stories means that we need something bigger. The, like, immigrants' rights movement needs to be more cohesive and needs to, like, fight for just more than immigrants' rights. Like, the healthcare issues that are going on, like, the fight for having a good union, like, being able to unionize, the fact that EFCA has completely been, like, cut and, like, shattered and something that we don't want. We need something more cohesive. And we need something that, like, fights side by side with, like, our with the workers that are at the factory right now. And, like, that's all I'm gonna say.
I'm Sarah. I'm in a union called United Teachers Los Angeles. I just wanted to say I'll be out at the picket line on Tuesday with you guys. And I think we should. This is sort of a question to everyone. If everyone could really think about the ways that we can bring this struggle into, you know, other groups of workers or other groups of students that we have contact with, in terms of, because I've just come from a meeting where we were talking about, like, what would it take to turn the labor movement in this country around, and to take it from right now, you know, workers being like, you know, union workers being like 12% of the workforce, and we have some budget cuts coming down on us, and they're cutting schools, and they're, you know, cutting social services, and the organizations that we have are not up to the task. And so what would turn it around? And I'm just very inspired by examples of workers taking action right now first, and then waiting for the organizations and the unions and so on to catch up. Like what happened at Republic Windows and Doors in Chicago, where the workers occupied their factory first, you know, and then, you know, figured out how to work that out with their union afterward. So, you know, we should think about, can we connect people with the Republic Windows and Doors workers? But I'm very inspired right now to see groups of workers thinking up creative things to do to fight the kind of tactics that are, you know, being put against them.
Okay, I've got Cindy, then Justin will be our last speaker.
Okay, I'm Cindy from Austin, Texas, and in Austin we have a sort of loose immigrant rights coalition that is in pull-out groups doing some really rowdy, radical things, but as a whole is often willing to accept some pretty ugly compromises in the name of immigration reforms. And we had a great May Day march that was loosely organized. It was really, really great. But they're about to ally themselves, I think, with a lobbying group, and I can't remember the name of it. It's an immigration reform lobbying group, which I think is a really bad idea. And they feel that Obama is going to act on immigration reform fairly soon. And I think many of you spoke to just what that's going to look like. And I'm just sort of wondering, you know, if there is thoughts about how that's going to be fought and how it would be possible to fight that in a group like Austin where they're willing to make a lot of compromises if they probably should.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I think people answered the question about the ruling class. Well, I want to assert that this has never been about getting rid of immigrant workers. It's never been about deporting them. Aside from a very marginal, more or less powerless voice that, you know, found within this, but it's also not just about controlling labor per se. I would argue that this is about controlling a political movement within labor that is threatening the current arrangement of the class struggle. When the compañeros say that we're tying our struggle to a broader fight, that is a consciousness that really is a threat. It's a threat because it's beginning to draw some political conclusions about what we need to actually change the system. The people with the power to do that, drawing those conclusions, and actually serving as an example for the rest of the labor movement about how we can actually begin to build rank and file organization, that we may have to start with challenging the unions that we're in, you know, which is a reflection of the state of the union movement. And I want to say that the union movement has, in large part, been turned around, I would argue, on the question of immigration by the self-activity of immigrant workers within it. And I think that that process is continuing and needs to continue. So I think that we do need to raise debates about what unions are doing or not doing. We do need to engage inside of unions to fight to turn those unions around. And we have to, you know, begin to learn these, relearn the tactics of rank and file organizing, and the politicization that comes with that. And I'll just finish with this, which is, you know, Obama, it's true, Obama has more or less kept his promises in terms of continuing the war on immigrants. I would say that there's one promise he hasn't kept. He actually threatened to renegotiate NAFTA, right? But if you follow what his representatives have been saying recently, he's actually saying now we need to actually continue to push for free trade in Colombia, and South Korea, for instance. So I think that in that sense, he is breaking the promise. But I think what's more important is what people expected from the Obama administration, how the struggle has changed the political landscape in this country, where now the majority of people who voted for Obama have the belief that change needs to come from this. I think the contradictions that are going to emerge between what people expect and what doesn't happen, along with the struggles that are actually taking place around the country, like our companies are leading, are actually creating the basis we can begin to push back and demand a real legalization, a real unconditional amnesty that actually creates the basis for not only liberation for the oppressed right now, but the beginnings of a new labor movement that can change the face of this society.
So thank you very much. We raised $428 in this room, which I think is very impressive.
turn over to the treasurer.
And I'd like to turn it back to Nativo first here for his remarks.
Well, first, in relationship to the question of the census, quite frankly, it goes to the Gandhian principle of non-cooperation, a form of civil disobedience, beginning with immigrants. And I was not initially convinced with this tactic until we started organizing large assemblies of our members, and particularly the workers of Overhill Farms. And I put out the question as proposed by this other coalition and presented it objectively. What's the purpose of the census and what do we gain from the census, etc.? And the proposition by this other coalition of why to boycott the census. Well, quite frankly, to my surprise, and I say to my surprise, because since 1970, I've participated in fighting for a full count in every census and everything that derives from that, what that means. But then worker after worker got up and said, wait a minute, Nativo, my husband was just deported a month ago. That was done by the government. Another one got up and said, my car was just confiscated here in the city of Los Angeles, and the mayor of Los Angeles is a Latino, and we've asked him to change that policy. I don't have a license, and my vehicle was towed. In 2007, the city received $56 million in towing fines. We call it the immigrant tax. That's just in the city of Los Angeles. Another worker got up and said, my daughter just finished high school with honors. She can't go to the university because there's no financial aid for undocumented. Okay. Another worker said, I'm losing my home. I went to legal aid. Legal aid told me, can't get an attorney for an undocumented. Person after person got up and said, the government is on my back. Now why should? What incentive is there for me to come forward and be counted so that others can receive money, municipalities, counties, states, etc., to put more people on my back? No. We don't want to be counted. And unanimously, the people said, we support the boycott. So I was converted. I was converted to that. And it's really based on the principle of that if the system is so persecuting me and excluding me and problematic for me, then I'm not going to cooperate with that system. To shake it up and to shake up all of the political leaders or hacks or elected officials, you know, that are drumming up the message of be counted, be counted, be counted for what? So that the government can further persecute me? No. And so that's the message that I received from our base, and we said that's the direction that we got to go. The other about the ruling class, I think Justin, you know, explained it, you know, very well. It's not that they don't want undocumented. They want vulnerable workers in perpetuity. Okay? So that to the degree, and we talk about it and kind of laugh about it, because Obama's policy of persecuting or squeezing the employers to discharge all these workers is just going to create a recycling of workers. Those workers are going to go to other companies, okay, where there's demand for their labor. They're going to be hired using the documents that they have to present in order to be worked. Those same companies that terminate those workers, they're going to hire other workers, but all of those workers are going to be in a vulnerability and perpetuity, insecure, fearful, intimidated, persecuted, etc. And that's what the capitalists want. You know, so it's really about that. The 1986 amnesty, we want the same thing. Full, unconditional amnesty for all those workers that are here and moving forward in the future for the new workforce that would come. I'm absolutely opposed to any type of bracero worker, or as they call them, guest workers. Immigrants have never been treated as guests. You know? So the impact of the General Brotherhood of Workers, we were just formed in January. So this is actually, and here's an irony for you. We didn't even want to get involved in this initially. Okay? Why? Because there was already a union. And so we didn't want to start our union and already get in a fight with another union of jurisdiction and decertification. We were looking at other targets. And so when the workers first came to us and said, we need your help because our union said that they can't do anything, there's nothing to be done, go start looking for other jobs. You know, my first reaction was, well, wait a minute, I know these people. You know, let's go talk to them. You know, talk some sense into them, you know. And the worker said, if that is your answer to us, we're going to go look someplace else. So, you know, we said, okay, let's get it on, let's organize it. So that fight was brought to us, and we were forced to engage, and we're in a love-hate relationship with that union because, for example, when the workers were being threatened with termination, the union didn't even have the intention of filing a grievance. So we turned around and we filed 254 grievances, and that forced the union to file then a collective grievance because the worker said, if you're not going to file it for us, we're going to file it for ourselves. You know, and guess what? The union did it, but they did it because they knew that the workers would then would go to the National Labor Relations Board and file a charge against the union for lack of representation. So the workers are engaging, taking the fight to the union. They're taking the fight to the employers, and they're taking the fight. And the irony, or not the irony, but the peculiarness of our union is that you can be a member of the General Brotherhood of Workers while you're a member of another union. Or you can be a member of the union without it having to be a union shop or recognized by the employer. Because we part from the philosophy of the Wobblies. It's the worker that has to recognize his union, not the employer, but the employer. You know, it's the worker first that recognizes, this is my union, you know, and I got to build my union and then force that employer to sit down and negotiate a contract. And then our fight is for green cards and a union card. So we want IFCA, but we want green cards at the same time because in the 1986, undocumented workers got their green cards, but in the last 30 years, their wages haven't risen in real wages, you know. So unless they have a union card that gives them the instrument, even if it's mediocre, at least they have an instrument now to fight, you know, for improvement in their wage and benefit situation. Then a green card is not everything to get them what they need, you know. And then lastly. Obama does want immigration reform, right? But it's not the immigration reform that the workers want, you know. And all of the rhetoric about hope, okay. Well, now we see in different issues the kind of hope that he was talking about. And so we're casting our lot with the workers, and that's the real hope for our country, the workers. Thank you.
All right. I just want to agree with what Justin said. I do think that people's expectations in Obama, misplaced as they are in this particular instinct, will help to drive this forward. Obama does want immigration reform, as Nativo just said. Actually, this action that was committed on Wednesday was done in order to make immigration reform more popular. Right, that was where they set out to do it. And after people saying, like, this is just a news analysis, I don't know how true it is, but after saying there was no chance that we were going to get immigration reform this year, now they think they can do it in a very short amount of time on the basis of these kinds of activities. And, you know, what the kind of immigration reform that they want, again, is a guest worker program, which, again, is a disgusting. I don't even know if you can call it a euphemism. It's just like guests are people who you invite to your home, you give them, you know, dinner and the best place to sleep and all that kind of stuff. And that's nothing like the U.S. has ever treated immigrant workers, and it certainly won't under any new guest worker program. Now, Obama, I think, is counting on division in order to get this to happen without a fight. He's counting on division between Obama and the rest of the ruling class. I don't want to just put it all on him, right? Okay. Division between so-called native workers and immigrant workers, divisions between documented and undocumented workers, and we need to do what we need to do is build solidarity between all workers. Now, on Wednesday, July 1st, the same day that the Obama administration announced it as offensive, I was down at my school, which is Kenyatta College. It's in Redwood City, California. It happens to be a Hispanic-serving institution. 52% of the student body is Latino and Latina. And I was there as the representative of my union, the American Federation of Teachers, sitting in a meeting where the counseling department was told that their department, which is funded by the matriculation fund, was going to be cut by 32 to 62%, which basically means that at least four people are going to get laid off. The people that they're laying off are counselors. The student services section of the college is being hit particularly hard. This college services primarily first-generation college students, people who are the first people in their family to go to college. It services immigrants, has serviced both documented and undocumented immigrants until now. We have a lot of people with learning disabilities. The people in student services, the ones that are being cut, are the people who make college possible for these people. And as I was listening to them tell us that basically there was nothing they could do but lay these people off, it occurred to me that they just don't care, the people in the administration, about maintaining the student body as it used to exist. Right? They were interested in having a Hispanic-serving institution as long as it got them special grants for the from the government. Now they're just fine with basically, in my opinion, like moving the line on the people that they consider garbage. Right? They're just saying, you got a learning disability? Too bad, you're not getting a college education. You're an English language learner? Too bad, you're not getting an education. You're someone, no one in your family before has been to college, you don't know how to work the financial aid system, you don't know how to get your education? Too bad, you just don't get one. That's what's happening. And I bring up this example to say that no working class person is going to be untouched by the current crisis. It's going to hit everybody. And that means that there is plenty of basis for solidarity, and we need to get out there and build it between people, Native workers, so-called, and immigrant workers, documented and undocumented, immigrant workers, because an injury to one is an injury to all. And if any group of workers in the United States is vulnerable in perpetuity, then we are all vulnerable in perpetuity. And I have to say that this movement is going to help us all. Once again, the immigrants' rights movement is being led by some of the most vulnerable people who are being hit first. And I couldn't be more excited and more proud to support them. So thank you so much.
So before we do a final chant, now that I've got three announcements I'd like to make. Haymarket Bookstore is open in two locations, at the Women's Building Auditorium and right in the next door. And that will be open during this dinner break. Also, be sure to not to miss Mark Steele's July 4th dinner stand-up tribute to Tom Paine right here in this room. Dinner will not be provided, so grab something to eat and go. And make sure you're here for the performance. That's at 6 p.m. Right, so that's coming up soon. And thank you. And if you'd like to become a member of the International Socialist Organization or to learn more about what it means to join the ISO, the ISO recruitment desk is open during the dinner, open during dinner at the registration table at the Women's Building. So I suggest we send these people out with a chant. So, si se puede. Si se puede.
Si se puede. Si se puede. Si se puede.